Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Coming up on today's show, which will also cover you through the weekend, hopefully, Evan and I are going to get around to that long-awaited Darius Garland conversation, and then he's going to explain what Animal Crossing is to me. That's coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. This calls the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him tonight. At the Q.
On the blow block. He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Evan, what's up, buddy? How are you doing in day whatever it is of our kind of altered reality here?
It's been 9 days since the NBA shut down. Can you believe it?
Feels like more. Like, I got a push alert today for my Google Calendar saying the Cavs play we're supposed to play like the Pacers tonight, and I was like, oh, this feels weird. I could be talking to like Tony East or something right now, and instead, like,
you got me.
You know. Well, no, I love Tony. You're an improvement over Tony, but you know, this is just like a situation where it's just like, I wish we were talking about, like, you know, how is Sexton going to defend Brogdon or whatever was going on with Andre Drummond. Like, I've never thought I would say this, but wouldn't you like love to just watch Andre Drummond shoot threes right now?
No, not really, because we're going to talk about this at the end of the show, but Animal Crossing came out, so I'm pretty okay for the rest of this quarantine cycle. If the state of Ohio shuts down like California did, I think I'm ready to ride this storm out. I got some fresh produce today. I think I'll be okay. So that's a flex and a brag on the rest of our listeners. I'm sorry for everyone else.
Yeah, look at you just eating healthy. What has been like? Have you had like staple meals during this? Like, what have you been eating?
Just my usual diet of salads, low carbs, high protein. Try to keep it healthy, resist the temptation of loading up on shit food, and I'm a germaphobe to begin with, so like ordering outs was already out of the question when this was starting to become a problem, and now that's actually a thing. I mean, like, granted, I do use DoorDash and Uber Eats every now and then, but emailing me and saying, like, listen, we're going to be doing like anonymous drop-off points like in front of your apartment if you want to order. I'm like, yeah, that's a no for me, boss. I'm just okay with cooking my own food. So yeah, no,
that's fair.
Maybe a little bit extra drinkage every now and then. Shout out to our guy Spencer Davies. He likes regular seltzer, but I like hard seltzer. And again, as everyone knows, I'll shill Bud Light seltzer or Kirkland seltzer if they ever make it at Costco. But just, you know, riding the storm out, just waiting for this to end. Hopefully the end is in sight, but who knows? Not to get too political, but the president's comments today weren't necessarily reassuring on the whole situation.
He's a moron. I don't care if that alienates people. He's a moron.
No, he's an idiot. Like, I can't wait, if my family lives through this, to Thanksgiving. Well, the election will be over by then, but I'll be like, do you regret voting for him now? Next time I see them. So it'll be like one of those like subtle, like kind of douchey judges on my part, but it is what it is. How are you doing though, Chris? I mean, we talked about the Pacers, but how are you and the wife holding up?
We're doing good. You know, I get up and like I have a little routine. I've been doing like 10 push-ups, some squats and some crunches like every hour just to kind of get myself like kind of moving a little bit. Did some yoga this morning. We've been going on walks kind of every day just to kind of get outside. We have been eating out, just kind of being very sanitary about it, just trying to fill some local businesses. Currently in the process of trying to figure out how I can best support my local comic shop, because if it goes under during this, I will be devastated. Shout out to Ground Zero in Strongsville, Ohio. Support them if you can. Marcus is a really good dude. I had all my lunches already kind of meal prepped, so I was eating like a peanut butter sauce, shrimp, and kind of quinoa thing that I made, which is very good. Yeah, it's very good. I'll share that in the show notes, people. Yeah, lockdown cooking. I love cooking. I find cooking to be very stress relieving.
I do too. I think a lot of this free time is me experimenting with recipes I've always wanted to try as well, which is nice. So
yeah, so maybe we'll find a way to do something like that. If you have a recipe you'd like to share, tweet us and we'll retweet it if it looks appetizing. So what we're going to talk about today is Darius Garland. We have not, Evan, I was thinking about this. I was in the process of doing like a little kind of silly blog post thing after the sword today, just kind of mapping it out. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I don't feel like I know very much about Darius.
Neither do I. He's kind of always been an enigma in the locker room. Cut from the same cloth in Colin Sexton, at least in the regard that he doesn't really like to interact with the media. He likes to get in, play hoops, get out, just to really not conversate that much. And if he does have to talk to us, he's incredibly vague or short with his answers and doesn't really expound upon things, which is fine. But unlike Colin Sexton, at least he does normal teenager thing. Well, he's 20 now, so I go, he's still a baby, so a teenager thing. So I think, I don't know, it's just like kind of hard to get a read on him as a person. Then as a player, it's just like, again, we've always preached on this whole aspect of potential thing, and like I can get why the Cavs maybe selected him fifth overall when you and I played this game a few times now where we go down the draft board of players selected after him and you really can't make a concrete case to select any of those players at fifth overall. I mean, Kevin Porter maybe, but Kevin Porter has just been a pleasant surprise for all of us and is arguably a top 10 player in this draft class, but maybe that's a little bit of our bias he's talking, and or at least for me. But no, it's just kind of hard to get a read on Darius. You touched on this and you made a really good point. Like, you'd give him, if you had to give him a grade for the season, you'd give him incomplete. And I still feel like that's the case with him, even after this shutdown. Maybe having like, God, almost 10 days, because Cleveland played on Tuesday, I believe, in Chicago. So at least 10 days to reflect upon what is and isn't Darius Garland. And it's just kind of hard to figure out what he is.
Yeah, you know, I think about like what I feel like I know about him is I feel like he has, I think his passing was undersold. I think that was one of the first things that popped for him on the tape early in the year, was just like that his passing was, I think, better than I thought it was going to be coming in. I think if you just look at how he even plays, it's just like a guy that's like not, it just doesn't feel like it's the, like a guy that you would feel like is all the way. Like, you, there's the hesitancy sometimes on a shot. There's a little bit of hesitancy to really take a lot of contact at the rim. I'm going to pull this up on Clean the Glass. Like, he's got a kind of defined habit of pulling up near the rim and not getting to the rim itself. He's a dude. He loves that floater. If you've watched Cavs games this year, you know that that's just kind of like his fallback shot, is that when he is struggling to get something going, or at least gets in the paint, like that is what he does. According to Clean the Glass frequency, he's in the 30th percentile of point guard to shots to the rim. He's in the 79th percentile in short mid, which would be the kind of floater shot. And then when we look at his accuracy, he's in the 3rd percentile at the rim. Actually, in the 86th percentile among it's combo guards, is how Clean the Glass has him listed. So he's in the 86th percentile of that, but again, really bad at the rim. And I don't want to say that like that is. I think it's, some of it has to just be like the year that he missed, right? Like, I just think didn't play summer league. You know, different players will tell you different things about what they think of summer league and how important it is and whatnot. But I think if you're Darius, if you're looking at Darius, you got to play 3 college games or whatever it was, misses a year, doesn't do a ton during the pre-workout process, may or may not have had another surgery. We still don't David Griffin's like the only person I've ever seen comment on that publicly. So that's
Fedor still kind of reported that he had multiple knee surgeries.
Oh yeah, no, you're right. Fedor did get that. That's my apologies. But Griff was like, I think, the first one to kind of pop the lid on that, and when he like said it on a podcast or something. And then he just is kind of, he's had a couple nights off. He said that has that groin injury, obviously, that I would assume is probably a little bit healthier by now, although we don't exactly know. But Darius, I feel like I think that incomplete grade to me, when I still think about his season, it's, you know, he's played a lot of minutes. It's like, I remember looking at this among the top 10 draft picks. I'll pull this up while we transition back to you here, but it's like, he's played a lot of minutes and I still feel like I just don't want to like say like I understand him yet, because it just doesn't feel like this is the Garland that, you know, was, I think, I don't think this is the Darius Garland that even Darius Garland would say is like the version of himself that he kind of expects to be out there all the time.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of it can be linked back to, and I know some people like to point fingers and say it's like you, me, Justin, Carter, maybe not Carter, he's been down on Darius for a little while now, but like people who host podcasts and discuss things, I mean, other people who write as well, just have been like, we've been defending Darius a little bit, and the expectations maybe. Maybe I'd like to elaborate this more on this in the next segment, because I think that's a thing we could have a serious discussion about in itself, but like, I do think there's a legitimacy to the fact that he only played a handful of games against not top talent. I think the best team he played was Kevin Porter in Southern California, and then he also played against Kent State, which I guess those are your two D1 opponents for his collegiate career at Vanderbilt. And you really have to just say that he was a high school player who got his feet wet on the hardwood in college and then immediately started playing against grown men. And as we learned through the truth movement, when it came to measuring players without their shoes on, he's actually 6'1". He is incredibly small for a point guard. I believe he's 195 pounds off the top of my head. 192, so sorry to fat shame Darius there a little bit. But I did notice when the Cavs drafted him, and maybe like just watching film with him, he had like a lot of baby fat, and like he was still like just really young when the Cavs drafted him. And then when he came into like media day and training camp, and when he had to talk to us, I mean, granted, he didn't really participate in training camp because of injuries and recovery and everything. He looked like he like was maturing into an adult a lot, and like that's obviously a good start. But I think that huge gulf between high school level talent and fringe Division I college talent to professionals and being thrown into the fire right away against like a sharp defensive team like Orlando, like that's that was the who he opened his career against. That's a tough task. And then I guess this is just the other question I have. Under J.B. Bickerstaff, Colin Sexton was starting to blossom, and we never really got a taste for Darius Garland because he was sidelined with injury, and I mean, just a lot of just things going on for him at once when J.B. head coach. But I do wonder if those 50-ish games that John Boeheim was head coach and, you know, trying to develop Darius into what Cleveland views as their point guard of the future, because by all accounts, when I heard, they view him as the lead guard of the future. Sorry for people who keep thinking Sexton is, but Sexton's a better scoring off-ball guard, I think, at this point. And again, not trying to quantify Sexton's ceiling, that's another can of worms for another day, but I do wonder if they had a full season of the JB just kind of running a simplified, dumbed-down offense instead of Boeheim being so rigid with his sets and just kind of not playing to the strengths of his roster. Maybe we wouldn't be having this maybe we might be having this conversation about Darius a little bit, but maybe it wouldn't be in such a just undecided tone. Maybe we have a little bit of a better idea to quantify what exactly he is and what he can and can't be.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the other thing I think that makes this really interesting is just kind of evaluate him. So I'm looking at the top 10 list of draft picks. And he's the only guy in the top 10 that has played more minutes than him to date is DeAndre Hunter for Atlanta. So to run through the top 10, Zion obviously has only played 19 games, 565 minutes. Ja Morant has played 59 games, 1,771 minutes. RJ Barrett, 1,704 minutes. DeAndre Hunter is at 2,002. It's the only guy in the top 10 above 2,000 minutes at 2,018. Darius at 1,824. Culver, 1,506. Kobe White is at 1,674. Jackson Hayes is at 1,951. Roy Hachimura is at 1,217. And Cam Reddish is at 1,551. The new guys like PJ Washington is at 1,759. You go down there. There's other guys that like Eric Paschal has played obviously a lot of minutes for Golden State. But when you look at this, Darius has played a lot of minutes and, you know, more than guys like Kobe White, guys like Ja Morant. And it, even though it's not like a massive amount more or less, and if you're depending on what side you're looking at it there, I feel like I have a much better read on what Kobe White is in looking at him and just kind of understanding what he's been and what Ja obviously is in leading Memphis to being very, very good and interesting this year. Mm-hmm. And I look at Darius, I'm just like, I don't quite know what you are. And that's a really weird thing. And the other part of this that is, kind of means that we have all this data that's hard to know what to do with. So he, as a duo, he has played the most minutes this year with Colin Sexton. That's his most common regular two-man lineup combination, according to Basketball Reference. They have played 1,255 minutes and 43 seconds together. They are a negative 11 per 100 possessions.
The only combo that is
worse for Garland is him and Jetty, and they're a negative 11.3. He's bad with everyone except Nance, and John Henson, who's no longer on the team. But everyone else that is sort of meaningful to the structure of the team right now, he's mostly negative with. And it's just sort of like, you know, not that any of these human lineups are particularly good or rate out particularly well when you look at the numbers, but it's just like, you know, I don't quite know what to make of all this. And it's just such a bizarre thing for me to look at this and be like, I've seen a ton of him, obviously, and just have no idea what he really is.
Well, I guess my question to you is, I mean, Trevor Magnotti did warn us a little bit, and I think there were people out there in the draft sphere who were better acquainted with Darius and like what to expect from him. He is, by all accounts, not very athletic when it comes to a guard. He does have some athletic ability. Let's not get it wrong. He's a professional athlete, for God's sake. But last season, just to like pull up like negative ratings and everything, like especially like I know a lot of the problems are on the defensive end. Like Darius Garland is not a good defender, and he gets abused in some situations, and it feels like partially, you know, growing pains of the young player, but there's tangible data last year to say that Colin Sexton and Jetty Osmond were statistically the two worst defenders in the NBA last year. Do you think that's also like a bit of a detriment on Cleveland's front office just in terms of roster construction, where they're not really putting pieces together that are able to mesh and maybe overlap for some deficiencies while others bring out such strengths that can mask the deficiencies of like these defensive-minded players? And maybe that's something we need to talk about in the next segment too, is what should Cleveland's draft strategy be kind of going into this, whenever it is, whether it's the summer or whether it's the fall. I don't know when the offseason's really going to be at this point. I don't know. It's just, I want to say firmly, and actually here's where I'm at with Darius Garland. I'm still going to give him like an incomplete grade. I think I'm going to do a little bit of a deeper dive on this and just kind of like start parsing through the numbers and like figuring out maybe what he is and what he isn't. But at this point, just based on eye tests and just kind of like watching him and pulling numbers throughout his rookie campaign so far, just based on like things I've written about him, I'll say it's incomplete, but people shouldn't be legitimately concerned. You need to maybe give him time to be fully healthy and be able to work out and everything else and just be 100% committed. And from what I remember correctly, based on Dylan Windler's Fortnite streams, Darius has expressed a desire to play in Summer League. So maybe the team lets him because he didn't last year. Maybe they don't because who knows? And there may not even be Summer League this year for all we know. But I'm not really ready to pull the plug on the Darius Garland experience or experiment yet. But I also really can't quantify what he is. And that's kind of disappointing to say, at least when he's played. Let me give the full number here. He has played, I want to say, around 45 to 50 games on the top of my head. And so if you don't really have an idea of what he is at this point.
59 games for the record.
59. Okay, 59 games. So I was off a little bit, but I don't really know. And it's just weird. Like, and I think I'll just like give you like an idea to think about this. I do wonder that maybe Kyrie Irving being arguably the best or the second best, if you're a Mark Price guy, point guard in the franchise's history, and Colin Sexton just kind of, you know, having such a strong blossom from his post All-Star break, his rookie campaign, and then pre All-Star and post All-Star break, his sophomore campaign, like just having two strong back-to-back years like that. I wonder if that's just kind of like exasperated Cleveland fans' expectations, where they have a guard where they kind of expect him to, especially when he's drafted so high and the team is just, you know, trying to find like the next guy, maybe like Kyrie, you know, kind of raising that bar so high, like people's expectations are a little bit too high for Garland, and maybe they need to temper them a little bit before they start, you know, either crucifying him or, in my case, if people really want to call me out on it, finding ways to defend him endlessly. I don't know. That's just something I think maybe we should talk about as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. I also look at just kind of with Darius, it's just like the, just to kind of note this in terms of draft strategy. Number one, I agree with you. It's just way too early to kind of write him off in any way. But the other thing to kind of think about, I think, is that the draft, according to Jonathan Givony, like 30 minutes ago, like might get moved. So it's just going to be one of those things where it's like we just don't know exactly how this is going to play out. Yeah, like this is still incomplete, not just because I think he's going to end up in that sort of incomplete zone, but it's like we just don't know what the NBA calendar really is going to look like for the foreseeable future, and that's just such a bizarre thing to consider. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back for the second half of this podcast. We'll be back with more Locked On. Time Cavs. Evan, I want to ask you this too. One of the things that I don't think we know very much about, and I'd have to, I don't even, like, I can't even figure out how many, I'm going to find out how many possessions they've played together, just to kind of see sort of what the kind of bit is here, and just kind of filtering how many, who he's played with and whatnot. But I got to actually make sure I do this right in this, in the cleaning the glass thing. But I cannot, I don't feel like I have a good read on exactly what Andre Drummond's impact on him has been, because I just feel like it's so early in this. It is so early in the Drummond experience and how that's sort of working and not working. You know, and it's just one of those things where it's like, I am still trying to figure out like what, like I sort of kind of have an idea of some of Drummond's overall fit, but it doesn't feel like it's like something where I know how him and Drummond sort of work together. And they've played, according to Clean in the Glass, when Garland's a point guard, it's 109 possessions. They're getting outscored by 25.9 points per 100 possessions. When you shift Garland to the shooting guard position, which would include that starting lineup, it's a total of 183 possessions, and it's minus 29 points per 100 possessions, with the weird outlier of in 49 possessions, Sexton, Garland, Osman, Nance, Drummond, with Nance in place of Drummond, is plus 13 per 100 possessions. So kind of a weird thing here when we think about that. And this big piece that theoretically should be on the team next year with this guy the Cavs invested, they're a pretty high draft pick on, and we don't know how they fit or how they're really going to affect each other yet. And that's also just kind of a weird thing to consider here.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know if I'm too worried about it, because if you look at the upcoming draft class, Cleveland can pick. I mean, I'm assuming at this point, based on what I heard, that the regular season won't be back, and we can just effectively wrap Cleveland's season up at this point. And so they'll have the second best lottery odds heading into the draft lottery when, again, we have no idea what the calendar is, whatever that's going to be. But just to like kind of fast forward through this a little bit, Onyeka Okongwu, from what I heard, is a player that the franchise is kind of interested in and would make sense as a long-term option as center. Especially, you know, the fact that he has drawn comparisons to Bam Adebayo, which, sign me up any day that ends in Y if you can get a Bam Adebayo type player. But yeah, no, it is a little weird, and it's something you really need to like take into consideration, especially heading into next year. And I think it was just a really weird time, because I can't even remember when Garland first was sidelined with his injury, but he obviously hasn't been able to play with Drummond very long, and maybe because by all accounts from what you and I have heard that he's going to accept his player option this offseason. I'm not going to quantify it with the season at this point, but so he will be in Cleveland for making $28 million next year approximately, and there's a chance maybe the Cavs try and flip him at the deadline as an expiring contract, or maybe they don't, because we saw that Cleveland wasn't able to move Tristan Thompson at the deadline because he was an expiring contract. But we'll kind of see where the Cavs are at, but I don't think that's really going to deter their draft strategy. So, yeah, I'd like him to have an established comfort level with Andre Drummond heading into next season and just kind of figuring that out, because I feel like part of that maybe is Bickerstaff still trying to get Drummond to buy in, and maybe it's like you talked about, like him making those threes. Just for the record, no, I don't miss those. I think if the Cavs were back on a regular basis and Andre Drummond is still taking threes, I think I'd be just as, if not even more, annoyed at this point at it. But JB is going to be here long-term as the Cavs head coach. He can get Andre Drummond to buy in as a pick-and-roll lob partner for Darius Garland, who, as we have touched on, has shown flashes of potential as a legitimately good playmaker. And I think if he was able to operate in this pick-and-roll heavy offense, it's a little bit more simplified and a little bit more dumbed down and like young guard friendly like it has been for Sexton, I think there's a better rapport and comfort level between those two. And maybe some of those just outlier numbers and wacky and obscure numbers that you were just pulling out that are just, you know, could be concerning, maybe you're a little bit more tempered and a little bit more reasonable and justifiable at that point. But I don't know. It's a weird time, because I had hoped that Andre Drummond was going to work, and maybe some Pistons guys were kind of souring the waters to begin with, poisoning the waters, I should say, to begin with the trade. But it's been a mixed bag so far on the experience, and I can't really say like he's been detrimental to the development of the young guys, but he hasn't been beneficial either. So it's just kind of a mixed bag, and I do feel like if JB's able to get him to buy in, and then if Darius is fully healthy and functional instead of, you know, just 50%, if whether it was with that nasty flu of his or a groin injury or anything else that's just kind of been bothering him this year. Like, that's the thing with Darius Garland. I'm like kind of going off multiple tangents here, but he seems like he's putting it together, and then something happens that just brings him to a screeching halt. And it's like he takes one step forward and three steps back, and then we're just kind of waiting for him to take that next step. And maybe that's what happens this summer. Maybe he has a strong start to his sophomore campaign. And I'm just speaking in hypotheticals at this point, but I don't really know. I feel like him having an established comfort level with Drummond would be really helpful, but I guess we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the Drummond buy-in would be huge. I think there are ways that Kevin Love could help this. I think there's ways, obviously, Tristan, I think, could be a good thing. Garland, I think, is a more, like, in terms of a lob passer, just has a better kind of feel for that than Sexton does. I mean, he's had at least one or two to KPJ that you're just like, okay, like, this guy sort of knows how to place the ball pretty well. And you're looking to kind of see that. If he's going to be kind of a lead guard creator type, if that's what his kind of situation is going to be like, that's obviously something you really want him to be able to do and kind of orchestrate pick and rolls and pick and pops and stuff. You know, I think for him, if I was going to like outline like a Darius Garland improvement strategy, I think conditioning would be the biggest thing. Just conditioning, getting his body right. I think the baby fat thing is like pretty real. I think if he could come into next season like being in really, really good shape, being kind of poised, being just ready to kind of handle the rigors of an 82-game season, I think that would be just the biggest thing. Like, whatever you want to say about Colin Sexton rookie year, the guy was, like, already in really good shape when he showed up. And, like, that was just, like, ready to go from Nick. The guy's just a weirdo in that sense. Like, he's just kind of an outlier for a lot of guys. Like, Luka came in kind of chunky his rookie year, stuff like that. But if Darius can just spend the summer, like, getting his body completely right, being healthy and ready to go, I don't think it's out of the question that we see the beginning of year two and he just looks like a completely different player. I think if you're the Cavs, that's probably what you're hoping for, because otherwise in that, you're just sort of like, what are we doing here? Because if you just look at like his kind of value kind of relative to the average player, he's like a negative 1.7 value over replacement player. That's pretty bad. And he's a rookie. Mm-hmm. He's really young, all that stuff. But like you need next year to be kind of a drastic uptick if you're going to be that. And just, I'm going to pull, while I transition you, I'm going to look up Kevin Porter Jr. just as a comp to just sort of what he is kind of value wise versus another rookie. But it's just like, I think that's what you need from him, is to come into year two and have a big leap. And KPJ, for reference, is a negative 0.64 player. So like, you know, he's like, that's a sizable difference in sort of they are.
No, absolutely. And I guess the luxury, and this is me trying to like crack a joke because I've been like serious this entire time. Darius is a client of a certain agent who the agency is shadow operated by a certain player.
Clutch.
Clutch to get that, you know, it rhymes with human growth hormone. Like, that's a Scooby-Doo is saying it. So like, if Darius can kind of get on that regimen, and he, like you said, if he can stay fully healthy and just kind of come in shape and ready to go just for the start of the training camp, and maybe a full training camp under JB Bickerstaff will actually do some good versus a training camp under John Beilein where he pissed away his time like running fundamentals and wasting everybody's time and largely pissing off all the veterans in the room. Maybe if JB can actually run a legitimate camp, like, that'll do Garland a lot of good. And just, you know, instead of just seeing flashes of the potential, we actually start seeing tangible momentum that is actually what we're going for here. And to circle back to what I was saying before, yeah, no, don't be concerned if this is the end of Darius rookie season. You're over. I mean, it's okay. You can be disappointed in it. I think I'm a little disappointed in it just based on like what I watched and like some scouting reports and stuff. But I feel like there's just a lot of factors outside of Darius's control, and certainly some things, especially when it comes to like him being in shape and ready to go, that were in his control that kind of just set him back this season. And
I mean, I would just say the thing is that we don't know exactly like what he, we don't know quite exactly what his timeline was on getting ready for the season.
No, not at all. I mean, by all accounts, he didn't participate in training camp because he was recovering from a foot injury, which I'm not going to out anyone or really I'll point fingers at one person because I doubt he's listening, but from what I heard, it's because John Boeheim, like, practiced them so hard that, like, there's a direct correlation between him and Dylan, like, that and Dylan Windler having these leg problems, and maybe Boeheim was a little too hard on them and, like, didn't, like I said, like, he wanted them to practice on Christmas. I forgot about that. That was, like, out of my mind and just came back. Sorry, I just said that out loud, but, yeah, I don't know if, like, maybe Darius was kind of rushed back in by the coach, not the coaching staff, but Boeheim himself, or maybe it was the team or somebody else, or, like, maybe Darius himself tried to rush himself back in. Like, yeah, we don't really know what his timeline was, and maybe just having all this extra time to, like, get 100%, and then maybe this summer after the NBA lifts a little bit of the sanctions and restrictions on how teams can work out and operate and how players can work out and operate just because of this coronavirus pandemic, he can just get into proper shape and just come into training camp next year. And he won't have a Colin Sexton-like transformation. Like, Colin Sexton, like, turned into sturdier than a brick shithouse over the summer. Like, he put on some noticeable muscle, but, like, I don't expect that from Darius, but at least he's in good enough shape that he's able to last 82 games, and then maybe that, like, again, that plays a huge part in him staying healthy as well, but I don't know. There's just a lot of outlying factors that kind of played a part in sabotaging Darius Garland's rookie season, and he was involved with some of them, but a lot of them were out of his control too, and it's just weird.
Yeah. No, it's all very weird. We know very little about Darius in just so many ways.
Part of being a clutch client happens that way too, is you are... If you're in the clutch circle as a part of the media, you're a very lucky person.
Yes. And I'll just say, like, if he is going to work out with clutch guys this summer, learning from LeBron, Tristan,
oh, yeah,
Ben Simmons, Draymond Green, like, those are guys you are 100%, I think, going to be interested in and, like, want helping you out.
Real quick, though, do you think...
Yeah, go ahead.
Despite Darius's rookie season, do you think that changes Cleveland's draft strategy, y'all? Like, I think it was The Athletic who said it, but, like, they've kind of largely pegged Kobe Altman's draft strategy as just taking best player available. And let's say that the best player available is LaMelo Ball or Killian Hayes, or those are my two point guard examples, because I don't really want to talk about RJ Hampton or Tyrese Halliburton as options for the Cavs, because that'd be depressing. But, I mean, at least I know based on Chris Fedor's podcast that the Cavs are interested in LaMelo. So, do you think, despite Darius Garland just kind of having, like, an rookie season, do you think, like, that maybe the Cavs target another point guard and they go, like, that best player available route, or they start drafting talent to, like, build around that? Because I think that's something, like, I touched upon before, instead of just maybe grabbing all of the best talent available and then trying to figure out later, maybe you start to piece together pieces that mesh and coexist and allow proper, healthy, and sustainable growth, and then that's the strategy? Or do you think they just go BPA this whenever the draft is?
My belief, if I was drafting, would be to go wing, the best wing type available, or go with Anekyu. If there's one guy that theoretically could break that mold just from his size, from a size standpoint, it's LaMelo.
Yeah, see, LaMelo's weird. I've slowly come around on it because you could play him at the three in theory, but he's 6'7", 180 pounds, so he'll get eaten alive unless he puts on a bunch of muscle between the moment he's drafted and by the time he puts on a Cavs uniform for the first time, if he was drafted by Cleveland. But I don't know. I feel like, yeah, I'd agree with your strategy as well. Like, you go with the best wing available. I mean, Anthony Edwards might have a little bit of a clunkier fit with the Cavs just based on what he is, and, like, kind of, like, there are legitimate concerns about him. But, like, you have Denny Avdija, DA, as we more eloquently put him, Isaac Okoro, who isn't a great offensive player, but he is a standout defender and he's an excellent athlete. And then, like, you kind of get in the nitty-gritty on things too. Like, I don't know. It's just... it's a weird draft and kind of an underwhelming draft, especially for, like, Cleveland to, like, be possibly having a top pick. But, yeah, no, I think wing player, then Okongwu, who is really skyrocketed up draft boards and is arguably the best player in this draft class, like, that's a good foundational piece to have down low, especially if he can space the floor a little bit like Bam does. And like I said, if he compares to Adebayo, that's fine. But if you grab LaMelo Ball and then Killian Hayes is, I mean, 6'5 with a 6'7 wingspan, you could honestly plug him in as a two guard or this lead guard. You could put Sexton or Garland next to him. Then we start to entertain that conversation again where who does or doesn't come off the bench. But I don't know. Yeah, like I think you and I are in the same camp where the Cavs need to start loading up on wings and stop targeting point guards in the draft. But a lot of the top players in this year's draft class are point guards, and I'm starting to have a little bit of the fear in the back of my mind that the Cavs are going to draft another point guard, and then I'll just be largely annoyed for most of the summer, and then watch them in summer league and be like, all right, I'm all in, and then just be disappointed down the stretch. So I don't know.
Yeah. I think there's just a lot to get into. It's going to be real interesting to see. Evan, as we get out of here, explain Animal Crossing. I'm going to give you 2 minutes in the clock. Explain Animal Crossing and why it's like something I keep seeing on my Twitter feed all the time. And one of my best friends in the world has like told me I should buy a Switch just to play.
Animal Crossing is a life simulation slice of lifestyle game by Nintendo. This is the first major installment in the series in 7 or 8 years, I want to say. The last game before New Horizons was New Leaf on the Nintendo 3DS. They have had mobile games. I think it was called Pocket Camp, which was, I don't know, just like it had like some Minecrafty elements where you can like craft and build things for like your own little camp, and then like you interact with people on the go, blah, blah, blah. But basically, the objective of this game is you move to a deserted island, and then you get to build a village slash town entirely from scratch. Like in mine, I have a house now, and I built a museum, and I opened up the local shop, and then we find out that, like, so the villagers that move in with you are anthropomorphic animals that have different personalities and traits, and, like, you just befriend them, and you can fish and catch bugs and find fossils, and it's just, like, it's a slice of life. It's, if you've ever played Harvest Moon, or if you've, I mean, a more recent one is Stardew Valley, like, it's just, like, a real simple, like, laid-back game, and I can just sit back and enjoy myself and just shut off my brain and forget about the harsh realities of the coronavirus right now, but, no, it's a lot of fun, and I enjoy myself, and I would recommend you getting a Switch and playing it, because it's a whole lot of fun for the whole family. So, yeah.
Okay, that's a good pitch. We'll see. We'll see what happens here.
But I'll say, I caught a great white shark last night, and I was pretty excited when I did, so.
Wow. Okay. Okay, we're going to think about this. Maybe next time I'll make a pitch for something. If I start tweeting about something weird, that's kind of all my tweets. I actually am, Evan, in the process of doing a blog post, if you're the sort that I'm stealing from Dan Reynolds at Raptors HQ, stealing an idea from him about like advice for people or a piece of media for a Cavs player to consume. If I was going to like put in Animal Crossing for one player, who do you think I should recommend Animal Crossing to?
Oh, God. Well, Dylan Windler, Kevin Porter, Darius Garland, Fortnite, so probably not them. I'm like really running through the entire. Maybe Chetty. Chetty's the most wholesome out of everybody on the roster. Yeah. He'd like a
I would
like this.
I would kind of like to see Colin do something very wholesome, just because I think it'd be funny.
See, I think Colin's probably a wholesome dude, but I still can't get out of my head. Yeah, I just don't know, and I can't get out of my head. Dylan Windler saying that I don't really know what he does in his spare time. I think he just sits on his couch when he goes home, and I'm like.
He had like an Instagram about that too, which is pretty funny. He had like a like some couch brand that he like maybe has a sponsorship with, and was like, "I'm sitting at home in my sectional right now." I'm like, Colin.
He was being forced at gunpoint to record the video.
No,
he did that really Nike campaign. He looked super like he wanted to be out of the room entirely. But Colin's he's a character, that Colin Sexton. And I just like, ever since Dylan's picture said that, I just picture him, he sits in like a white room, like fluorescent lighting everywhere, like he just sits on the like on a couch just staring at the wall, and then like his alarm goes off on his phone or his watch or whatever, just tell him like it's time for practice, it's time to a game, that's when he gets up and just moves like he's a robot. I don't know.
He's just like meditating. Like that's all he does, is he's just like meditating or like watching like Tarantino movies. It's just gonna be something weird like that.
Or he actually does believe in the Jedi arts and the brains and what we think it is, and he really does meditate. So.
Or he's just like really big into that Jedi Fallen Order game.
I have to look that one up. Is that the one that just came out?
Yeah, which I have not played. I've not owned a game system since college.
Oh, Chris, you and I are very different in that regard.
I just lost time for those things.
Jedi Fallen Order is fun. I picked it up for a little bit, and it's entertaining, but I need to pick it back up. But
yeah,
you and I can have this talk one day. I'm very critical of the direction the Star Wars franchise has gone. So,
This
is a pleasant surprise, to say the least.
Yeah, the last Star Wars movie is garbage. The garbage movie, garbage plot, garbage. Give me Rian Johnson. Give me Knives Out 3, because I want Knives Out 2, just like solving what went wrong and just like a spoof on something in Star Wars. I don't know. That's a terrible idea, actually. Don't do that, Rian Johnson. Just make Knives Out 2 so I can enjoy it.
What would you title Knives Out 2? What would be the subtitle before we go?
Knives Out 2. I need like a good. I want it to be like. I don't know what the subtitle is, but I just want Adam Driver in it. That's my only critique. That's like what I want. I want like.
I really like him a lot.
Yeah, he's great. I want Adam Driver like in it, and then like I want Lakeith to be back. I don't know. I don't really know what the subtitle is, but I want Knives Out too. I just want more Benoit Blanc.
Yeah, no, I think it'd be fun. And what's the movie with Adam Driver and Bill Murray in it? I haven't seen it, but I've seen the trailers for it. And there's just that clip of Adam Driver saying ghouls, and that's just like...
The Jim Jarmusch movie. Let me tell you what it's called. It is called The Dead Don't Die. It's actually on my list to watch during this hiatus. And Jim Jarmusch from Akron.
There you go. That's our movie recommendation for the day. Support your local movie producers/writers and...
He actually has two Adam Driver movies. One is called Patterson, that is about Adam Driver plays like he writes poetry in that movie, and then The Dead Don't Die.
Maybe I'll check out both.
At least one of them is on Prime.
Okay, cool. There you go, folks. We're gonna come up with stuff for you to watch and listen. Maybe that'll be our thing to help you after you stop listening to us. Just like, what can I do next? Chris and Evan have your back.
Go on Amazon Prime, I guess buy Animal Crossing. Don't leave the house. GameStop's are closed now, so just go on Amazon Prime. And we'll be back on Monday. Enjoy the weekend. If you have any Cavs games that you can think of that you'd like us to rewatch, please let us know and we'll get to them. We have one on the docket and we're kind of working through some of the others, but please submit those. We're going to play Cavs Trivia again and hopefully have some fun people on to come shoot the shit with us amid everything that's going on. For myself, for Evan, it's been Locked On Cavs. We finally talked about Darius Garland in detail, and we'll do that again at some point in the future. Thanks for listening.